Now we turn to God's word in the book of Genesis, chapter 27. Genesis chapter 27, and we read from verse 41. Genesis 27, verse 41. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob." And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah. And she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, "Behold, thy brother Esau, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, and arise. Flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran, and tarry with him a few days, until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him. Then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day?" And Rebekah said to Isaac, and her words leading to Isaac sending Jacob away. This continues the sermon we had about Rebekah, Jacob's mother, last Lord's Day evening. You remember we first see her as a young and godly woman in Genesis chapter 24. There she has one particular quality which becomes a sign to Abraham's servant. And that is there in verse 12, where he asks if it might please the Lord to identify the woman that the Lord has appointed for his master's son Isaac by this test. Actually, in verse 13, "Behold, I stand here by the well of water, and the daughters of men of the city come out to draw water. And let it come to pass that the damsel to whom I shall say, 'Let down thy pitcher, I pray thee, that I may drink,' and she shall say, 'Drink, and I will give thy camels drink also,' let the same be she that thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac, and thereby shall I know that thou hast showed kindness unto my master." In other words, you see, his simple request for a drink at this well, that was one thing. But that this woman might also extend her thoughtfulness to his camels and offer to draw more water up from the well in order that these camels might be refreshed with water as well. In other words, a serving heart and serving hands. And it proves to be, as you read further down in Genesis 24, that's exactly what she did. She gave him the water and offered to water the camels as well. And that proved to be the sign. And by that he knew that Rebekah was the one chosen to come back with him as a wife for Isaac. But then next we saw, you remember, that no son came for 20 years. And this marriage was key to an heir that would come who would have the blessing of Abraham. Abraham himself who had the blessing, who gave it to Isaac. But who would Isaac give it to? And who would be next in the messianic line that would lead all the way down to the coming of Christ? No son for 20 years. But in chapter 25, verse 21, we read that Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived, and there were twins. Not one, but two sons in her womb. And so you see, if the Lord makes us wait for something important that is his will, he will sometimes give us twice as much to honour our patient and prayerful waiting. But then, years later, chapter 27, verse 1, when Isaac was old. Now, he was well over 100 years old. People lived into their hundreds in those times, and Isaac was old and he was blind, and he was about to make a serious mistake. Verse 4 of chapter 27. He wanted to give the blessing of Abraham to Esau, make him the next in the messianic line. A man who was out of the covenant, who was profane, who was utterly unsuited and not God's choice in this. The danger is that he will do this, and what will happen? So much is in jeopardy. But Rebecca overhears and goes into action. And there in chapter 27, you have the familiar account of how that she quickly tells Jacob to impersonate Esau, and thinks that by this intervention she'll make sure that the blessing goes to the right son. But of course it was presumptuous, because what did God say when the two twins struggled in Rebekah's womb? The elder shall serve the younger, meaning that the younger son, by a little, Jacob will be the firstborn, as it were, in position, and he will have the blessing of Abraham. And if God said that's what will happen, that was what would happen. And yet Rebekah, quick thinking, full of resourcefulness, takes things into her own hands and makes sure it happens by this impersonation that she bids Jacob to do, to make Isaac think he's giving the blessing to Esau. And of course it involves Jacob and her husband Isaac in deceit and hurt. Well, then we have our verses in chapter 27 and from verse 43 to 45, which we are looking at this evening. And these are the consequences of Rebekah's actions. And they bore bitter fruit. And they are on record for our admonition, but also for our encouragement, to remind us that there is a right way in these things. And let us consider the message here. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise, flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran, and tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him. Then I will send and fetch him from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? In other words, Esau has vowed that he's going to murder Jacob because of what Jacob has done in stealing that blessing from him. And there are two things here. First of all, there is panic on the part of Rebekah. And then there is peace. The panic that she brought on herself, but the peace that she might have had. And it's a lesson to us concerning the sovereignty of God, and remembering that truth, and by God's grace, it controlling us, governing us, ever reminding us, so that we never panic, but instead enjoy peace. How does it apply in this case for us, for our learning? Well, let's look first of all at the panic. And you can tell that she's panicking, can't you, by the way she puts it. When she tells Jacob to flee for his life to Laban in Haran, Verse 44, tarry with him for a few days until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee. See, she repeats herself. Until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee. When you're frantic, you tend to say things twice, don't you? Even more times. Repeating yourself, because you're not in control of your feelings and even your words. And she has to hastily now arrange for Jacob's escape, for his safety. And this, dear friends, is the panic that she has brought about because she had interfered in a situation she had no business interfering in. She tried to divert Isaac from giving the blessing of Abraham to Esau. Now we know her scheme, don't we? How quick thinking and clever she was. The savoury meat that she prepares to give to Jacob to make Isaac think that it's Esau and what he has prepared. Esau's clothes that Jacob wears. The animal skins on Jacob's body, so that when Isaac feels him, he'll feel that rough, hairy animal skin and think it's Esau's skin. And so she thinks that she has succeeded and it has worked. And of course it has. And poor Isaac is deceived. Jacob has the blessing. But Esau comes afterwards, realizes what has happened, and is furious. And he vows to murder Jacob. Rebekah's favorite son. And so now there is a crisis. If she thought there was a crisis in Isaac making this great mistake, giving the blessing to Esau, this is now a real crisis. And you see, she finds that what she has done in sinning, in bringing about this deception and lies and intervening in God's dealings, she finds that in her sinning, God touches her in that very sinning. Because her favorite son, Jacob, is in deadly danger and she's got to send him away. And you see, God is not mocked. And whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And often in matters of God chastening us, the chastisement that comes upon us can be directly linked to the thing in which we have sinned, so that we know that it is God's displeasure and God bringing us to repentance over this. And you see, it teaches us, dear friends, that there is only peace when we leave everything to God. Although Isaac's attempt to bless Esau seemed to put everything into great danger, how could it, really? Because that prophetic promise, chapter 25, verse 23, the elder shall serve the younger. Jacob will be the one to take precedence. He will have that patriarchal blessing in the next generation. How could it be then that that is in real danger if God said that's what would happen? It only looks so from Rebecca's standpoint, looking at with the eyes of sense. But in terms of the sovereign purposes of God, it couldn't be, could it, that blind Isaac would give the blessing to Esau. Somehow or other, just like when Abraham was about to slay Isaac and God stopped him in the nick of time, so Isaac could have been about to bless Esau and God would have stopped him in the nick of time. Rebekah had no need to intervene. Could not God have overruled this? Of course he could. Isaiah 43 and verse 13, he says, I will work, and who shall let it? That is, literally in the margin, turn it back. If God says that Jacob is to be the one, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob, then Jacob shall have the blessing. There's no way it could have gone to Esau. Although it looked as if it was about to, and it would do, God would have intervened. Dear friends, we can take comfort from this. It does not depend upon us in terms of what God and how God fulfills his purposes. He does not need our help. C.H. McIntosh, a godly brethren writer, puts it well in these words, describing what Rebekah did. There was no waiting upon God whatever. Isaac's eyes were dim. He could therefore be imposed upon. And they set about doing so instead of looking off to God, who would have entirely frustrated Isaac's purpose to bless the one whom God would not bless, Esau. That's a good point, isn't it? Looking off to God. You see, there are times when in God's purposes he does want us to have a part to play in the lawful use of means. And we should be ready to be his instruments in those cases. But this is clearly not one of them. And so Rebekah was presumptuous and took things into her own hands. And now these bitter consequences. She thought to secure the blessing for her favourite son Jacob, and now she thinks she's going to lose him to murderous Esau. You think of David by comparison. When David was in the cave of En-Gedi and Saul was in the mouth of the cave, and David's soldiers from the back of the cave in the darkness whispered to him, "One fatal blow, and your enemy will be dead, and then you'll be king. No more being hounded and chased by King Saul. It'll all be done." And David said, "I will not put my hand forth against the Lord's anointed." He cut the corner off Saul's robe, Saul not knowing it, in order to hold it up afterwards as proof that he could have killed him, but didn't. But even then, David's conscience smote him that he even went that far. And you see, that is the point, isn't it? Leave it to God. Don't take it into your own hands. Even as much as David did was a trouble and a conviction to David. How much better it would have been if Rebekah had left it to God. And dear friends, how much peace we forfeit because we somehow think that things are in our hands when they're entirely in God's hands. And we exalt ourselves in our presumption and we imagine that we are vital to what God is doing and we presume to try to do things desperately, panicking, when God's throne and his reign and his mind carries on his undisturbed affairs and there's peace before the throne of heaven. See the further presumption in verse 45. "Then I will send to fetch thee from thence." Notice, "I will send for you, Jacob." Just a few days. Get away. Until hopefully Esau gets over this. He's usually quickly up and quickly down. And so let his anger cool and fade away. And then I'll tell you when it's safe to come home. It's very poignant, this, because you see, those few days turned into 20 years before Jacob came home from Haran. And Rebekah had died in the meanwhile. And she never lived to see her favourite son again. And in fact, this is the last mention of Rebekah in the Bible. No more mention of her after this. I will send for you. And that too is presumption, isn't it? In her panic, she says more than she can do. You remember James 4 and verse 13? Where we're reminded, aren't we? And we often remind ourselves in how we put things when we're expressing our intention to do something. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. What is your life? A vapor. Here, today, gone tomorrow. Ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. No God willing. In the case of Rebecca, you see, when we panic, we forget God. We forget even to be in deference to God's will over things, don't we? And so we sin in that way as well. I don't know about you, but it does surprise me, not to be critical, but it does surprise me how many Christians you listen to who say, I'm going to do such and such tomorrow, or next month I'm going to be in such and such a place. And there's no God willing. There's no if the Lord will. There's not even a I hope to do such and such. Such confidence. And how can you be confident when you don't know, as James says, what will be on the morrow? You know not what a day may bring forth. You see, a strong sense of God's sovereignty not only keeps you from panicking, it does keep you from presuming, so that you say, God willing, to things. Like the Apostle Paul, if the Lord will, I'll visit you and see you in Rome and so on. That is godliness. It's a lost thing amongst Christians these days. You tend to find it amongst Reformed Calvinistic Christians, don't you? Because they've got a right biblical sense. We've got a right biblical sense of God's sovereignty. And you see, it's more than doctrine. It's more than just in the head. It's in the heart. And it's your outlook on life, isn't it? And acknowledging the Lord in all your ways. Never be embarrassed about saying, God willing. It's a nice reminder, isn't it? It gives God the honour and the glory. But I will send for you in a few days. Well, the Lord proved her wrong. And the Lord proved that she had no right to presume that that's what she would do, because she never did. And so, never panic over anything. Jesus says in John 14 and verse 1, let not your heart be troubled. If there is heart trouble, I don't mean medical condition. I mean if there is nervousness, if there's anxiety, if there's panicking, then you see, it's not acknowledging God's sovereignty, is it? Remember Dr. Lloyd-Jones and his famous words, faith is the refusal to panic. And that's a good definition, isn't it? Because if you really believe that God is on the throne, if you really believe that God's sovereignty comes right down to your life and mine, and the most minute of circumstances, that he is God most high and performeth all things for me, how can I panic? How can I be troubled in my heart when things are in higher hands than mine and are never out of control? It's not man who's in charge, not circumstances that put me at their mercy. It's the Lord over all. Isaiah 28 and verse 16. He that believeth shall not make haste, like Rebecca here, hastily arranging things, doing things, putting things in place, presuming to determine what the future will be. No, no. godly and believing patience. God is over all. As we saw in Psalm 46, verse 10, be still and know that I am God. We need to be still, don't we? Whenever we react hastily, impetuously, and are fretful and frantic over something, we need to tell ourselves, be still. Remember God. Remember this is all under control. The heavens rule. The Lord is in this. We need to speak to ourselves and then panic will turn to peace. Let's look at the second point then. Peace. Until thy brother's fury turn away and thy brother's anger turn away from thee. And the curious thing is that this is in fact what happened, though not in the way she thought. But this actually did happen 20 years hence, when Jacob and Esau were reconciled most beautifully. If Rebekah had left things to God, she could have had the peace about this. And it would have happened a lot sooner. You know the story when Jacob would go to Haran and stay with Rebekah's brother Laban. And that stay turned into a process of the Lord dealing with Jacob in gracious chastening, and how that he would have the tables turned on him. It's remarkable, isn't it, this, that Jacob deceived his father Isaac by pretending to be Esau, and Laban deceived Jacob by making Leah pretend to be Rachel, the young woman that Jacob loved. And so Jacob was deceived in turn by impersonation. You see again, where we sin, God will touch us in that sin in a very similar way to show us how displeased and how that we'll have to say, as I have done, so God hath requited me. And it's right that he has done so. May I not do this again. And then, of course, Jacob was exploited by Laban, wasn't he? You read the chapters that follow. Remarkable, isn't it? Jacob was a wily character. He inherited that from his mother, Rebekah. But you see, Rebekah was a wily character like her brother Laban in Haran. And so, meeting his match in Laban, he found that Rebekah sent Jacob to the very place where the wiliness came from, that family. And Laban, how he was able to exploit Jacob, promising Rachel, making him marry Leah first, another 7 years for Rachel, and then getting him to work for him, changing his wages 10 times, making him work hard night and day, getting the very most out of him, and Jacob suffering all the consequences of what he's wreaked upon others, and now he has it wreaked upon him. And he's only too thankful to get home again after 20 years. But it turned out for his sanctification. And although it was hard, it was God's way of straightening out that character of Jacob's and humbling him and changing him so that he'd come back a different man. But all the while, you see, he lived with a burden while he was in Paddan Aram in Haran. because it was the thought of meeting Esau again. Have you ever had the experience of knowing that a certain thing is coming up in the future, some months away, and you put it to the back of your mind, and then as the weeks go by and the date for that thing gets nearer, the anxiety begins to rise and you begin to dread it and have all kinds of thoughts about it. And Jacob, to begin with, perhaps didn't think much about this, but as the years and the years and the years went by, 20 years, but he never forgot that God was going to bring him back again according to his promise, and he'd have to face Esau. And he did come back. How different he was when he returned. Just in passing, remember, he went out with just his staff in his hand that day when he had to run for his life with just his staff. And he came back with a large family. He came back with a number of servants and rich in sheep, goats, camels, cows and donkeys. One writer said he could have made quite a village out of just all that he had himself if he'd have stayed in one place. But wealth doesn't bring peace. And he had to face Esau. And you remember how he sent messengers to Esau when he was back again? And he said to him, in effect, said to these messengers, tell Esau, I'm married now, and I've got a family and lots of goods and things, and I've come to meet you again. And then the dread and the fear when these messengers come back and say, Esau's coming to meet you with 400 armed men. And Jacob is now panic-stricken. But in prayer at Peniel, the Lord comes. And there's that wrestling. And he begins by probably being on his knees, beseeching the Lord for safety and for deliverance from Esau. And he turns out holding on to a mysterious visitor who is the Son of God before his incarnation in the form of an angel. And Jacob finds himself holding on for dear life and saying, I will not let thee go till thou bless me. And he's changed from praying for deliverance to praying for himself, that the Lord will bless him and deal with him. And you see, the Lord has got him to the point that he wants to bring all of us to, really. That what matters more than our getting our prayers answered is that the Lord makes us the kind of people he wants us to be. And prayer is not getting things from God. It's really relationship with God and God molding us and changing us and even changing the character of our praying, so that really we have got what we didn't ask for, which is more important, our sanctification, our being changed, as well as, usually, if it's the Lord's will, the thing we asked for. And so the Lord blessed him there at Peniel. And then there was peace. And you remember, he meets with Esau, and you've got these tremendous words, chapter 33 and verse 4, where there is this encounter. Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And oh, what relief! Esau completely reconciled to Jacob. God has answered prayer for that, as well as changing Jacob from being Jacob, supplanter, crafty, catcher of other people's things, to Israel, a prince with God. And now he is blessed and there's peace. That's a lovely touch in verse 10 of Genesis 33, where Jacob says, I have found grace in thy sight, for therefore I have seen thy face, Esau, as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. In other words, your smiling countenance, Esau, is such a reassurance. It's almost as if I've seen the smiling face of God. And that says a lot as to how Jacob was used to viewing God. His smile, his love, the light of his countenance, just like God himself to me. And of course it was. God was like that to Jacob and made Esau like that as well. And peace. After all these years, after all these dealings of God with him, peace. But the point is this, you see, as we conclude, Rebecca might have had this peace if she'd left it with God and hadn't tried to interfere and intervene and cause Jacob to impersonate Esau and steal Esau's blessing and make him furious and murderous and have to send him away and all the rest of it. And it teaches us, dear friends, that there is peace when we humbly trust in God. And it was all part of God's purpose. And even though it was wrong, and even though Rebecca suffered for it, Jacob suffered for it, although was blessed in the end, this was God's way, wasn't it? Of giving the blessing to Jacob, even through the wrong that was done. And it is a remarkable thing that in all the weaknesses, imperfections, sins and failings of this family, God works through them all. And God ensures the blessing goes to Jacob. And God blesses and deals with Rebecca, blesses and deals with Jacob, because they are his people, not like Esau. And if you think, and if I am led to think, all my messing up and my mistakes and my foolishness and the things I've done that are wrong and all that seems to be so far from what it should be in my life, in my family, in my circumstances, dear friends, God is so sovereign. As one of the Puritans put it, he can draw a straight line with a very crooked stick. And God can take it all up into his purposes and have his sovereign way. And we marvel at these things, don't we? And we can only say with Paul in Romans 11, verse 36, of God's unsearchable judgments of him, and through him, and to him be glory forever and ever. But Arthur Pink said in his Sovereignty of God, there is no fixed resting place for the heart and mind, but in the throne of God. Rest there. This prevents panic, and it will promote our peace. May it be so, for the glory and praise of our gracious God. Amen.